first question's all about your childhood.
Start that again.
My first question's all about your childhood.
Well, did I
it's your fingers.
Yeah.
Right. I need to ask it.
Yeah, go.
Tell me about your childhood, where you grew up, what your parents were like, what you were like as a kid, okay. All of that.
I grew up in Beverly Hills. And
that's not true, though, is it? So we tell the truth
like Fresh
here.
Prince of Bel-Air.
No,
no. I am one of four boys. Quite eccentric parents, I think. My father was a teacher, a musician, restores antique instruments, and it's quite out there. And then my mum is a she works with people who have, you know, issues. So whether she's been a therapist or whether she is, you know, working with disabled people so quite an interesting background. One of four boys, we all do very different things. We're all encouraged from a very young age to do what we wanted. If we showed interest in anything straight away, they encouraged us to do that. So I've got a brother who's a computer programmer, another brother who's a farmer, and another brother who's a stand-up comedian, DJ, and then me. And we all do very different things.
Did you take up any weird hobbies as a kid that your parents encouraged?
Weird hobbies. I used to dig quite a lot.
Nice.
I did a lot of digging. Yeah, me and my brother dug up the garden once, made a camp over the summer. It was very dangerous. But we kind of shored it up with bits of wood. A lot of digging. But no weird things. I always played drums. That was my hobby.
What about at school? What kind of kid were you like?
I didn't pay attention. I wasn't interested in authority. I saw one of my school teachers actually, and I my first reaction was to apologise. I just said, I'm really sorry. I'm really, really sorry. And they laughed and said, apparently I was quite good fun. Just didn't really pay attention. So, yeah.
Were you quite a rule breaker then?
Yeah, of course.
Did you get in trouble a lot in your teenage years?
Yeah, lots. Yeah, because I always thought I was going to be a rock star, so I didn't think school, you know, school was for me. But I was a bit of a naughty kid. But I think you know, boys are. I like to have a laugh, and I wasn't, you know, particularly academic, but you know, I was always into, you know, I loved art and I loved, you know, making things. Just, you know, the maths and English bit was a bit like, meh.
What about influential figures growing up?
Influential figures. Yeah, my grandfather was a big one. I had a great art teacher called Mr. Warboys when I was at school. He kind of got me, he'd let me wander around with a piece of clay, just, you know, having a wander around school, just because he knew I was probably trying to get inspiration for something. As I wandered around the corridors with a piece of wet clay. But yeah, there was, you know, my family were really great. They were really good. So, you know, really inspirational, my family.
Can you think of any sort of words of wisdom or advice that was passed on to you as you were growing up that stuck with you?
Yeah, well, just work hard. You know, if you work hard, then you'll win. You know, it's like, you know, you can kind of think about doing things for ages, and or you do things half-heartedly. And if you do things half-heartedly, then you know you'll have a half-hearted result. So yeah, just kind of work hard and also enjoy what you do, because, you know, like, you'll work most of your life, so you've got to enjoy it.
But how do you discover something that you love doing?
We can make it fun. You know, you can make it fun. You can go, like, you can find yourself in a situation where perhaps it could be really dull, but you can make it fun. There's always people there who will, like, want to go along with you if you're wanting to make it fun. And if you're working with great people, I think, you know, yeah, like you can make that fun. You know, I think when I was about 18, I think I had a job in a chicken farm. It's the only job I hated. The only job I would actually say that I really hated. And that's because I was given this amazing job where I had to, there was the killing line, right? And there was this big kind of Suffolk inbred guy who killed chickens all day. That was his job, just killed chickens. But the chickens came in on a hook, went through a tank, were electrocuted and came out, and then this man killed them. And then I was there for a morning, and that morning I got there, I was told I had to clean the water tank the chickens went through.
That's nice.
And it was full of, you know, the chickens would drop off sometimes, and it was full of, yeah, rotting, putrid chicken. He then would show me his deformed ones that he was collecting in a black bin bag.
Right, I'm now a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Cool. Actually, talking about your career, can you tell me a bit about where you started and then you became a musician?
Yeah, so I started off as a musician and I started playing drums when I was very young and writing songs and really into sort of kind of music technology, so you know, which was kind of influenced the kind of music I made, which was kind of predominantly electronica. But I started off as a musician, and then from there ended up being quite good, and people decided they'd pay me to be a musician, and I started as a session musician, played with a lot of dance acts. And then from being a musician, eventually I had to go and have some kind of education because my parents said it was important. So I went to drama school.
Oh yeah, what did you study?
I studied theatre design. I don't know why. I think it was a friend of mine said that he was at drama school and there was lots of really fit girls and lots of gay guys. So therefore we could clean up. So I think that was the main driver. Behind me going to drama school. So I went to drama school. I did theatre design. It was fun. But as I was doing that, I was still playing drums all the time and making music. So from there, I then, you know, decided I'd go to London. But after leaving, because that was in Guildford, after leaving drama school. So I went to London and ended up falling into the club scene, which at the time was kind of just starting to explode. This was kind of sort of in the 90s. And it was just, you know, starting to get big. And I found, you know, I'd always found that if I could get paid to play drums, that was the best way to do it. So actually being in a band was never that good because you had to go and get a deal and do all this. And then it was never as good as actually, you know, as a session guy, any time I was there, I got paid. So then I discovered playing percussion with DJs in clubs. And I ended up promoting the clubs that I was playing at. And so from there, I then ended up opening a club called the Dog Star, which is in Brixton. And it was the first of those clubs in London, you know, a bar that had a DJ in it. Mm-hmm. Hadn't been done. You always went to a club. But yeah, that started to happen. So we did it was the old Atlantic pub in Brixton, which had been an old Jamaican pub with kind of, you know, old Jamaican guys playing dominoes and stuff and drinking Guinness. And yeah, so we took it over, got burnt out in the riots. So we'd only been open for a little while. And I remember running in there with a mate to take the decks out because they didn't belong to the club as, you know, as outside was burning. But yeah, then after that kind of reopened that. And then from there just ended up running clubs around Brixton. I ended up, there was a place called the Bug Bar. I ran the Bug Bar, loved the Bug Bar. I think it was one of the best bars ever in London. Tiny, sweaty basement under a church. And there were some amazing nights went on in there. And it was always like, you had water dripping off the ceilings.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it was one of those places. Yeah. Always had that good smell of damp.
Gritty.
Yeah, and then opened Mass, which was the big church in the middle of Brixton, and did some huge club nights in there. It was a massive club, but terrifying to fill every week. I used to do it every Friday, and I had to find 1,500 people every Friday who were prepared to come and spend money in a club I was promoting. But yeah, did that. And so kind of learn about how to be a club promoter. I had no idea. But yeah, so I started doing that. And then also ran other clubs around Brixton, you know, over the years, like the Living Room and a few others, but still doing the music the whole time.
Yeah.
And then I stopped doing that, and as I stopped doing that, the music industry changed massively because of the, you know, all of a sudden there was an iPod. The iPod appeared. And all of a sudden, people didn't want to pay for music anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to download it for free. And there was Napster and all of these other sites that were doing things. And yeah, so Napster appeared, and there was, you know, the music download thing started. And all of a sudden, I found myself, you know, in a situation where I'd been injured. I had an injury to my arm, so playing drums, the session work, you know, just wasn't there because I couldn't do it anymore. I'd been touring and I'd been playing kind of. You know, constantly. Mm-hmm. So I had an injured arm, and which then led to tendonitis. So I couldn't play drums anymore. So that was one, you know, one way of making money gone. And
was this a really sad time for you?
Yeah, it was awful, because all of a sudden, I'd gone from earning an awful lot of money as a musician, club promoter, to realizing that clubs were eating me up a bit, and the touring in between all of that was also eating me up. I then had an injury which isn't repairable, so I couldn't do what my first passion was, which was playing drums. Mm. And the other thing I did was write music, but then suddenly realizing that if you make music, it had all changed, and record companies weren't prepared to develop the acts anymore or to do anything. And I thought, what else do I know how to do? And so I realized I had to reinvent myself.
This actually links to what I was going to ask you about, a sense of purpose. Would you say you were sort of questioning your everything at this point? If you couldn't pursue your passion.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do. I was lost totally. Yeah. I couldn't fall back on my college education, because I didn't really learn anything, because I just kind of gone through the motions. But I don't think anybody saw how it was going to change. And so all of a sudden I didn't know what to do. And I ended up going and working with some friends of mine, a friend of mine, Joe. So Joe and Sam, they ran Don't Panic and Liberty. Mm-hmm. So I went to see them. Another friend of mine, Suresh, owned a company called DocuMovie. And I remember talking to Sam, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And he ended up saying to me, well, we're shooting this party for PlayStation. Do you know how to use a camera? I'm like, no. So he gave me a camera, said, press the big red button, and point it at people who are having fun. So I did, and it was great fun. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, hang on, this is good. Mm-hmm. And then I started coming up with ideas for things. And then the whole creative thing, whilst working with Don't Panic and with Sam at Liberty, the whole creative thing started to kind of kick in with me. And I thought, oh, hang on, this is something I can do. Mm. But back then I was like, yeah, filmmaker, I'm going to go and I'm going to make, great short films, that really appealed to me. So I found a new skill, which is then what I started doing. So from going from the clubs and the music, the film actually sat really well. So it didn't feel too different from the other things that I was doing.
How many times do you think you've reinvented yourself?
Oh, about 3 or 4 times. You have to do it. It's like, it's part of life. If you don't, lifestyle. I mean, imagine if you get a job when you're 16 and you leave school. You never know what you want to do when you're 16. I mean, like, it's a joke to ask kids what they want to do. Imagine if you do something when you're 16 and then you retire in your, late 60s? Yeah. And you've done the same thing and you've, stepped up the ladder that there is that's available to you within that one career. To me, well, perhaps to some people that appeals. To me, not at all. You've got to recreate yourself. The new Adam. I'm so different from the Adam who used to... show up outside nightclubs with his car full of his drums and set up in a club and play. I'm a different Adam to, the one that would sit and play cards for, 10 hours on a bus whilst we were driving to another gig. I'm a different Adam now. It's like to reinvent yourself is important. It just makes it a bit richer. I think it breaks your life up into these really cool chapters. So you go, oh, that was the chapter. That was when I was doing that, and then this is when I was doing that.
What's the next chapter?
The next chapter, well, I think I'm just starting it, to be honest with you. So I was the creative director for a big agency called Mindshare for quite a few years. I went in there as a filmmaker but ended up as a creative, and I loved it there. It was great because I got to learn how to deal with the corporate world, which I was so used to doing things on my own way, and sort of breaking the rules. But I found I could break the rules within a corporate environment, and it was actually quite interesting. And I learned how to do things properly and how to deal with clients and, understood some of the lingo a bit better, especially in the world of media, what all these different things were, how they buy and sell things. And so that was really cool. But then I moved into publishing. So I went to Condé Nast, which is an old school publisher. Really, it's no secret to know that they were very late to digital. So I went in as their creative director for digital, and it was interesting. I mean, it was, it was again a reinvention, because, I'd gone into being, from an agency into a media owner, and it was different. And it was really interesting, old school publication, dealing with people who'd been there for years, set in their ways, do things a certain way. And I went in there and I think I upset things a bit. People are like, whoa, what's going on? Oh, mm-hmm. The guy from the internet. But you know, it was cool. And now I'm about to go to Hearst, which is the other big publisher. So they're Elle and Esquire and all those, and they are really embracing digital. So yeah, it's going to be sort of interesting to be the new kid at school again. You know, to go in and nobody knows who I am, and I'm just going to go and go, hi, it's me. I've got some ideas for stuff.
Go in with a new accent.
I might go in with a different name.
Do it.
I could call myself Chuck or something. Hi, I'm Chuck. And everybody would know you as Chuck, won't they?
There we go. What?
Nah, not Chuck. What? Chuck's bad.
I feel like you'd be a good sort of Bartholomew or Balthazar.
Oh no, Bart.
Bart.
Bart. That's what you should. Bart. Bart.
What do? No, not that question. How do you keep energized by your job?
I think it's important that you do it yourself. I think if I was given a piece of advice years ago, which I really like, which is if you go into work and someone says to you, Adam, how are you? You go, I'm fucking great, thanks very much. I'm great, thank you. Because if you do that, people are then like, oh, he's great. You know, if you're enthusiastic, not in a sarky way, not in a way that is insincere, but you know, how are you, Adam? I'm fucking great today, actually. I'm really good. How are you? Mm-hmm. Then that in itself goes into your own brain, making you feel great and makes other people be more, you know, more positive around you. And I think if you have that attitude when you go in the morning, I think that changes it. I think that changes people's attitude towards you and your attitude towards them. And I think it works. I know it's a really silly, simple thing, but I really do believe that it's a good way to do things.
What do you think the secret to your success has been?
I don't know.
You mentioned before a bit about blagging.
Yeah, okay. I think the one thing that I learned from a really young age, I don't have wealthy parents. I'm not from, a kind of a fortunate background. Well, I am. I mean, my parents were teachers, but I didn't have the bank of mum and dad to fall back on. I always had to earn money. If I wanted to live in London and I didn't want to go back to live in rural Suffolk where they are, then I had to do something. And I learned very quickly that, blagging. I mean, I felt like I'm on the blag for years. Every time I do anything, I think I'm blagging it. But I guess the fact of it is actually I'm now just doing it. But
you've become the
thing that I've been blagging. But yeah. I think everything, I think a blag is good. So for instance, if you go, somebody asks me if I can do something, I just go, yeah, of course I can. Mm. Because I'll know somebody who can do it. Mm. Or I can phone one of my mates and go, do you know anybody who does this or that? And they'll be like, yeah, actually.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like life is very much about not what you know and who you know. And I think that's quite sad for people that don't have the connections, but they do have the talent.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I think you need to have the kind of mindset to kind of realise that, keeping a good, strong group of people around you takes effort, to make time for people. To keep in contact with people, to every now and then drop an email and say hi. Mm. And you lose contact with an awful lot of people doing it that way. But the people, it's not that I'm saying that you just keep people who could be useful to you. But by having an interesting group, circle of friends, I think it's really cool. Over the years, I've met so many different people from so many different places. What? And I keep in contact with them and, they can be useful, whether they're involved in the music industry or if they're involved in, they're like an advertising creative or they're a designer or they're a media person, I understand I've got this brief, it says this, what does that mean? And they're like, oh, it just means that. You're like, oh, okay.
What kind of values do you look for in the people that you surround yourself with?
They've got to be honest and funny. Because, you've got to be able to just have a laugh with them, because that's how friendships are born, isn't it? You just having a giggle together and being able to enjoy each other's time. So, yeah, and they've got to be honest. And, I like people who kind of cut to the chase, they're quite straightforward.
Would you say that you're lucky or that you've made your own luck?
I think there's a certain amount of luck, but I think you do make your luck as well. I've been quite fortunate in, occasionally being in the right place at the right time. But also, I think there has to be a certain amount of talent there. I've pushed myself. That thing, do something that scares you every day. I mean, I've been terrified, the situations that I'll put myself in, because I'll go, yeah, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And then, but it's those moments, actually, that
got myself into a few of those. Yeah, but reliving them in my mind.
Yeah, but they're the ones that really work. Like, you know, like standing on stage in, you know, in front of however many thousands of people that I've done, and you know, my legs are trembling and my you know, arms are trembling, and you know that you're coming in first, and that, you know, and it's like that is the same. Or, you know, or walking into a meeting that you know you've you're totally underprepared for, because nobody's given you the right information, but you can't let them know that. You've got to still be able to style that out. And I guess that's where my whole, you know, being a club promoter in Brixton and being able to blag and whatever just keeps you in good stead, because, you know, you're able to kind of navigate those situations, I think. But yeah, I've come unstuck. I mean, we all have. Well, you just go, I have to be really honest, I actually really don't know. And then people, like, if you're honest and you say it in that way, people will always kind of fall on your side and go, fair enough, if you go, I didn't get pretty, I didn't
get. Although, didn't I call you after my horrible experience at MTV?
Yeah, that was awful.
That was the worst thing I've ever done.
See, I'm actually cringing about it now. I'm holding
my toes. My toes are curled. Oh. See, everyone says do something that scares you, be ballsy, have balls, go on, do what you love. Went in there, they told me to get out. They literally refused to shake my hand.
It's because you kind of did the wrong thing.
But I learnt from it.
You learnt from it.
I don't know what I learnt.
Don't ever go to MTV
to
again.
To abide by rules. Well, no, I'm banned. They won't let me in the building. What would you say is your proudest moment, your proudest achievement?
Oh, I think having my little girl. I mean, of course I'll say that. I mean, that was, I mean, you know, that was amazing. It kind of changed the way I thought about life and yeah, it was, you know, that was great, and I'm still kind of in it now, you know, very much. So I love that, and it's put work into perspective. I've learned I'm gonna have to be a lot more organised with my time. So I'm gonna, you know, I get up super early now anyway. So perhaps I'll go into the office at 6 every morning.
Oh God, and don't do that.
Yeah, I know, but. Well, I won't, because I want to hang out with my daughter. But yeah, but it's all about, I think I'm going to have to organise my time differently. But yeah, I mean, but achievement-wise, I think in each of my kind of reinventions, I think there's been a great achievement in each of them. I mean, I think there'd be like a good one from each. I got to play with, you know, I played a session for Keith Richards from the Stones. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I played on stage at the Reading Festival. That was amazing. You know, so there's those things which are all great. And then within the creative, I've won some awards. I was a judge for the DNADs.
What life advice would you pass on to your daughter, do you think?
What life advice would I pass on to my daughter? Just be good at what you do. You know, just enjoy it and be good at it. You know, work hard, because if you work hard, it does pay off. You know, if you put your all into it, I think you can succeed, you know, at whatever it is. You know, enthusiasm, I think, is a good thing. I think if she shows an interest in something, I'll do what my parents did for me, which is encourage it. I'll just encourage her to, until she decides that ballet's not for her, you know, or whatever it is. But if she wants to do that, then I'll just encourage her until she decides that she doesn't want to do something, until she finds that one thing that she does really love. And then I'll encourage her with that, and I will be, you know, driving her to her salsa class. I don't know why I said ballet and salsa.
Salsa and ballet.
I have a little
girl.
You've got
very safe, elegant, lovely options here. What's your definition of success?
I think success is if you do something and you're genuinely proud of it. You know, that thing where you can show your mum and say, yeah, look, I made that. Or show your friends and be proud. You know, like, success is when you go into, like, if you go into a meeting and you're showing your showreel to a client or to, you know, to somebody, and you're proud of that.
Mm.
You don't feel there's anything, like, you know, there's nothing like showing, you know, somebody something, you know, especially someone you don't know, and you go, and you kind of go, if you're doing that, then there's something wrong. You know, you should be able to just be proud of that. And I think that's success. I think, you know, I don't think it's about money at all. I mean, I'm all about the scrapbook, not the checkbook. You know, I do what I do because I love what I do. And I think that, if it was about the money, I wouldn't be keeping true to myself. because I could go out there and get like a huge wage and kind of talk at conferences about what our future of content is, mm-hmm. But I don't want to do that. I want to keep it real. I want to make the content. I want to be that guy still. And so
what pressures would you say come with being successful?
I think failure is, you know, failing at something, you know, producing something a client doesn't like. You know, you kind of, I think, you know, you make something, you're quite pleased with it, you send it to a client, they come, it comes back and they say, I hate it. I mean, that is just like, you know, and as a creative, we're really sensitive people, and we're kind of like, you know, we're super sensitive, and we kind of like, you know, something like that is hard to take on the chin, and you're like, ooh, and then you try and get all defensive over it. And you know, but the fact is, you know, ask for amendments, you know, get it made, keep them happy, and put it down as a failure. You know, we all fail, like, at sometimes, but then, you know, but then you just keep going because the buzz of success is great, you know. That's the thing, isn't it, I think.
How do you approach failure then? I mean, what advice would you instill in your daughter for approaching something like failure?
Oh, you hide away and don't come. And I'm joking. No, you just keep going. You just, like, you know, failure doesn't mean that you stop doing the thing that you're doing. You don't just stop it because you failed once. You know, that's not like, you know, racing drivers don't quit when they don't win a race.
Yeah.
They keep going until they win the race. And I think that, you know, you have to just keep, you know, just wait for the next race and then get in it and see where you come. Because, you know, failure, you learn a lot from failure. So I think I'd say to her, continue to fail. You know, failing's a good thing.
Continue to fail.
Do. Yeah. Keep failing until you get in that top bit. And then the buzz is that bit more, I think, you know. Because then you kind of, you know, the success is sweeter. If you win all the time, then you just think you win all the time. But, you know, you have to have those failures, surely. I mean, I think, you know, I've done some awful things.
I was going to say, have you ever royally messed up? Like today, even to today, you're thinking, oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Amazing thing was I once shot an interview. This is the worst thing I ever did. So when I was out, you know, in my filmmaker stage, I went and shot an interview with somebody and was so intent on talking to this person that a very simple operation, which I was going to start and stop. For some reason, I decided I'd start and stop the camera so that I'd cut out my own questions and just film his answers. I knew what my questions were. I should have left it rolling, but I didn't. So I was just, you know, start, stop. Great interview. Thanks, great to meet you, brilliant. Get back to the studio. Back then it was tapes, I log the tape. I go through, I put it in the wrong order. So I filmed me talking to the guy. And then I had deleted all of it. Well, and I hadn't recorded any of his answers. And there was no coming back from
that. You couldn't blag your way through that one.
I couldn't blag that one. I couldn't say, oh, you know, a magnetic field came along and wiped the tape. You know, all the things that I might have been able to come up with, I couldn't blag it. I had to just say, I need to reshoot the interview. And they're like, you can't. And I'm like, well, we don't have anything that we can use unless you want to hear my voice. But yeah, that was bad.
Well, then that comes down to honesty then a lot of the time. Don't hide in the corner. Be kind of upfront about your failure, I guess.
Be upfront about your failure. But I never, ever did it again. And that's my point, is that if you fail, you learn a big lesson. And also, some people do hate you, but that's just life.
What is your life lesson?
Oh, my life lesson.
Yeah, is there a mantra that you live your life by?
A mantra I live my life by? Don't know. I just, you know, I've got to have fun. I've got to be enjoying it. I've got to, it's like enjoy all the good things. I know bad things happen, but, you know, just all there's so much good. Like, I got married. I've got a kid. I've got great friends, a great family, I enjoy my work, you know, just there's all these positives. Yeah, there's some shit things, sometimes things don't go to plan, and yeah, oh, that's not good, or this is shit, I don't like that, I don't like that. But, you know, the positives always outweigh the negatives.
Well, talking about having fun, I've got a quote from you. As a creative, you're saying, one day I might grow up when the true naivety that makes a creative tick curls up in a corporate flame. Do you want to maybe talk about that a bit? I think it's very hard to maintain creative.
Oh, I think, no, I don't. Do you know what? It's great at the moment. The world of creative is in, like, I think it's the most interesting it's ever been, because there is so many new jobs coming up for creatives now, because the world's changing so much. I mean, you know, clients are now having creatives in-house. I think that, you know, everybody's wanting to make content. I think there's, yeah, it's just all these new jobs are there now. And so I just think at the moment, being creative is great, but curling up in a corporate flame is when that, you know, when people are kind of business as usual. It should never be business as usual. Mm-hmm. It should be, you know, like that's the worst thing that you can do. Keep pushing, keep doing something different. Do something that challenges your clients. You know, make them think differently. Say why all the time. Keep saying why, because you get some awful briefs and people don't understand what they want. So keep asking questions so you get down to what it is that they want, and then just do something that is just slightly off the wall, because you can get away with it now. You can. I mean, you know, I just think that the advertising world at the moment, you've got short form content, which is here, which is quick, which is nimble, which is based on data. You've got long form content, which is over here, which is stuff that is, you know, I don't know, a show on Netflix or film or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then you've got all this mush in the middle, mm-hmm. which is just pointless. I mean, you know, it is. I mean, I think advertising, you know, ad agencies, for example, I think that they have to change massively or die, because, you know, the 30-second TV spot doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not there. So I think, you know, it's short-form content, long-form content, and I think all that mush in the middle should go. And I, you know, I'd love to sit up there in the long-form content. Not there yet. That's for a reinvention. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm down here, and I love it. It's great, and it's different. But don't just be making mediocre stuff that you're not proud of. Back to that moment of you watch it and you're not proud of that, you wouldn't share it with your friends, you wouldn't show it to your friends.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, I mean, you're getting someone who's giving you money to make a film, for example. Do as much as you can, get some favours in, push it, just really push it to its max, you know, try and get that extra bit of budget, do something different. But yeah.
So what do you do when you hit a creative wall? Or do you ever?
Yeah.
And?
Walk.
Okay.
I'm in an environment, you sit in an office, you're sat there and everybody's kind of staring at you because you're the creative going, so what are we going to do?
Have an idea, make it big, but also safe.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, what do you do? Something different. And, you know, I find that, you know, I work in London and you're in an office. I walk. I just go and I just walk. And I'll walk for like 20 minutes.
People
and
watch.
Yeah, I just walk around and I just think. And then it's easy because you need to not have people asking you stuff. Mm. You know, you need to not have the pressure of people looking at you. So I mean, I walk. And, you know, it just kind of clears my head a bit. You get a bit of fresh air. It's great if it's raining. And you just get, like, just go for a walk. And I, you know, I find that works for me. But I know other people. I've got, you know, friends who every morning meditate. You know, and I, you know, I've got friends who go to yoga and do that. I like walking.
Yeah.
You know, I just walk. And then I find if something still hasn't come, then you know, I think it kind of sits in your brain. I mean, as a creative anyway, creatives don't work 9 to 5. You don't, because you don't kind of walk away from the job and you know, you're not a mechanic where you stop work at 5:30 and you don't fix cars anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you walk away from work at 5:30, but you might have an idea at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the, you know, that is the world of the creative. So I think you just, you know, I walk and then sometimes I don't try and force it, you know.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, let it sit in my head for a little bit, you know.
And where would you say you get your main source of inspiration?
People, just people on the street. I love watching, you know, I love film, art, music. You know, there's always something there. Like just looking at something that somebody else has done can often inspire. You know, I mean, it's not that you're plagiarizing, because you might be using it in a different context, but you know, just looking at other stuff that other people have done, it can be amazingly inspirational. I mean, it's like, you know, even you know, sometimes reading like a line in a book, you can suddenly go, whoa, that just makes so much sense to something that I'm trying to achieve, you know, and can be super inspirational.
Do you have any books that mean a lot to you, or records that defined you?
No, I mean, I've got there's an album called Aphex Twin Ambient Works, and it's just one of those things that I've always listened to for years and years and years. It's a great album, and it's quite unusual. Well, it's quite weird it's quite kind of weird electronica, but it's, I don't know, I find it really easy background music, and it has a pulse and a feel to it, and it can just, I don't know, I love that. I found that really inspirational. And then kind of books, I mean, there's so many. I read a lot, but yeah, I tell you what I do enjoy is I quite enjoy photography books. They know those big coffee table photography mm-hmm. books. I love just sometimes being able to just flick through those because they because they're not a commercial. So not commercial photography, like street photography, because they're not trying to sell it to a client. So it's not shot for a client, and this is people shooting things that look slightly weird. I love them. I just love them. I think there's some really cool ones out there.
I've only got a few more questions for you.
Okay.
One of them is, do you have any regrets? Is there anything that if you could go back in time, you would do differently?
Yeah, I think I would have... I would have sort of grabbed the ball by the horns with what I'm doing now a lot sooner. I think I tiptoed around it because I've been a musician. I knew how to play drums, and I think, you know, I knew that part of it. But I think when I started, I was kind of intimidated by the creative process because I thought there was a process. I really thought there was rules to it. But now I've found out that creative directors don't have to have been a graphic designer, a design director to be a creative director. You just have to be creative. You just have to be someone who is genuinely, you know, whether you're a writer, writers are massively creative, or you're a painter, or you, I don't know, like, you know, a musician, a filmmaker, all those people can be creative directors because what you do is direct creativity. You know, so you don't have to be caught up. There is no structure. I think that was invented by the advertising world, you know, to by creative directors to make them seem more important. Mm. You know, we're not that important. We are just, you know, people who manage to pull everybody's thinking together. Mm. You know, I employ everybody who works for me is always better than me. I'm just, you know, I'm just kind of clever enough to know, you know, when they should come in. You know, imagine like an orchestra. I'm the composer, the conductor at the front of an orchestra. Yeah. And I just know when the certain people should come in.
And that's an art. that's an art. Talent.
But they're all better than me. They're all very talented. But I'm just there bringing them in at the right time. But I think, yeah, I wish I'd, I wish I hadn't thought it was a dark art. I wish I hadn't just thought that there was, you know, some kind of dark art to being a creative, because there's not. You just need to have lots of ideas, and I have lots of ideas. And you just need to, enjoy it, because if you enjoy it, everybody else will enjoy your ideas.
Do you have a vision for your future? As in the next 10 years, what do you see?
More children. I'm going to have more children. I would love to... I'm really excited about Hearst, which is my new job. I think that the magazine industry is exciting. I think that some magazines are going to be a bit like vinyl, you know, now, like, you know, people, you know, now collect records. I think certain magazines are never going to go out of print, even though they're talking about print dying. I think that, I'm excited to be in somewhere like Hearst where, you know, seeing how it pans out for digital. I think that's going to be fun. And then I don't know. I mean, you know, like reinvention is all about like stumbling upon something that you love. Perhaps I'm going to go and make a Hollywood movie.
I bet you do Can I be in it?
Yeah, sure.
I'd love that. Just as myself.
As yourself?
Yeah, I'm just there.
Cameo.
Yeah, a cameo, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, cool. No, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, this is why it's so exciting. And, the way that, creative's changing at the moment, who knows?
That's why I think you're so successful. It's because you see the possibilities in everything around you. Everything for you seems to be an opportunity. Like, that doesn't worry you where you might be in 5 years' time. You just know you'll end up doing something great.
I'll do something that I love, that I love for sure. I mean, you've got to enjoy it. I don't know. At the moment, I'm in the process of writing a script for something. You know, I don't know. Perhaps I can concentrate on my Hollywood acting career.
Yeah. Behind the camera, I'd say.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Wow. But you never know. This is the thing, you know, like in 5 years' time, who knows what I'm going to be doing. But
does anything scare you?
Oh, yeah, of course it does. Yeah, I mean, I'm a creative, so I'm quite sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, like I overthink everything. And it's only my wife who really stops me from really overdoing it. But yeah, I overthink it. Everything. But at the same time, I think I see opportunity, and if it comes along, then I grab it. I'm not scared to do that now, and I think that's what I learned, is that if something like that comes along, just grab it and do it.
And what about insecurities within yourself?
Yeah, of course. I mean, everybody has insecurities. I always think I'm going to fail. But that's what keeps me on my toes. You know, it's like, you know, if, you know, I've got that thing where I said, you know, you have to scare yourself, which is like, a, you know, a nice stock line, isn't it? It's so true. You know, I've done some campaigns or some things before, or, you know, that I've been really on, you know, on
Stalkers.
I've been scared, like terrified, you know, sleepless nights. But then you do it and then you kind of like, you know, you're elated from it. So, and then if I don't do those scary things, I think it's a bit shit. I'm like, well, that's not very good, is it? Or, you know, I haven't really pushed myself, but yeah, we're all insecure and I think everybody's insecure, but I think it's sometimes it's just about, you know, having the confidence just to stand up and, you know, and say something. Like when I'm, you know, I meet people all the time who want to be creative, but they don't talk, they're scared to say their first idea. You sit in a room in a brainstorm and everyone's, you know, sat looking like that. And I just start by saying stupid things, because if I say something ridiculous, then they know that they can say something that is better than what I've just said. And then that way everybody gets comfortable. Clever. Then you can say anything. It's a, you know, I love those situations. You know that thing, no idea is a bad idea. I mean, that is a bit of a lie. But
you've got to get the shit ones out of the way to get to the good ones.
Yeah, make some jokes, make it funny. And then, you know, see what happens. Encourage people to talk. You know, in those situations, don't be intimidating to them. You know, let people feel natural with it, and then you'll get some great stuff. You know, all my best ideas are other people's ideas, but that's because I've instigated it enough. It's that I've, you know, yeah, but I've, you know, I've made it, you know, collaborative enough that we can all do it. So we all create this amazing thing. It's not all about me having the best idea. It's about us having the best idea. And so it's about encouraging people to talk in those meetings, because so many times I'm sure you've sat there and you're like, I'm not going to say anything. I've got an idea, but I don't think I should say anything. It's stupid.
Most of my ideas are still up here because I'm just too scared to share them.
Yeah. I like your shoes, by the way.
Oh, thanks very much. Look how big my feet look, though.
You've got a tiny bit of dirt on the end.
I know, Robin did that. This is what I'm insecure about, the size of my feet.
What size are your feet?
They're a 7.
My wife's a size 9.
Brilliant. Done. Yeah. My work has done. It actually is as well. Thank you.